This is Antigone Magazine, Issue 9, Women with Disabilities. The Secret Lives of the Invisibly Disabled, Three Women in University, by Megan Ryland. When talking about disability, certain images come to mind. Often, the first is a blue sign with a white figure in a wheelchair. With this image comes the assumption that disability is something that you can see immediately, maybe even a difference that can be understood instantly. However, every experience of ability is unique to the individual. Many people who are differently abled don't have any visible indications of difference at all. It is this invisible aspect of disability many institutions forget to accommodate, making the invisibly disabled experience harder than it already is. I spoke with three women who attended the University of British Columbia, Anna, Jessie, and Sarah, whose names have been changed, and asked them to speak about how disability has impacted their daily interactions with institutions. Anna has chronic pain syndrome. Jessie has ankylosing spondylitis, arthritis, fibromyalgia, OCD, and anxiety. Sarah has clinical depression and anxiety disorder. The label of disability itself has created tension in each of their lives. Anna identifies with the term disabled, but it wasn't an easy label to take on. Says Anna, "It took me a long time to be okay with that, because I felt like it was all about what I couldn't do, what I was never going to be able to do. And then I started to realize that it was actually about just understanding the boundaries that were there to keep me safe and healthy and make sure that I could do things that I needed to do because I could get help." Jessie accepts the label with reluctance. "I personally prefer the term differently abled, but I know that if I want to access services, I need to identify as disabled. It is something I wrestle with. I dislike the term disabled because I feel that it constructs an identity category as not being another identity category." Sarah feels similarly. "I identify with the label disability, albeit grudgingly," she says. "I realize that I am differently abled. My label of preference. I prefer self-identifying as differently abled for two reasons. It's politically correct, and unlike the label disability, it does not take away from my agency of having ability." Clearly, these terms have an impact on the people defined by them. Each woman I talked to described her identity in a way which resisted some aspects of disability while embracing others. Alongside the actual management of disability, it seems, is the management of the label. Anna, Sarah, and Jessie each spoke about the struggle to explain themselves and their abilities to people. While they each experienced this challenge differently, the task of repeatedly having to identify and, in some cases, defend the presence of an illness is frustrating and stressful at times. The girls face a panel of invisible disability critics on a regular basis, Jessie admits. "I've had people say, 'You look fine,' but that actually has nothing to do with anything. You can almost feel like you are faking it with an invisible disability, because it's so widely questioned. I doubt my own validity, because it's questioned so widely. It makes me wonder if I'm less deserving of assistance than someone who is visibly disabled." In order to access accommodations like those available through the UBC Campus Access and Diversity Program, you've got to be prepared to talk about your disability a lot. "How many hoops do I feel like I have to jump through before I think, 'Screw it, I just need to go to class. I don't want to spend all my time in the Disability Resource Center,'" Anna explained. All three women spoke about the great importance and value of Access and Diversity's accommodations program. Still, Anna and Jessie admitted to feeling that there was still room for improvement. Anna has often found it more useful to talk to professors about her needs individually, instead of working through intermediaries who may not be able to help due to bureaucracy or resource issues. University can also require a lot of runaround, especially when it comes down to financial aid. While Anna received scholarships to fund her education, she had to lobby to keep them when she was diagnosed with chronic pain syndrome and had to take much fewer classes. Every year, she has to remind the university administration to continue her funding for specific awards. Jessie told me, I'm consistently told that I don't have any unmet needs financially, so I'm disqualified for bursaries. I have to work to have enough money to survive, and that's tricky. Balancing school and the rest of life's requirements is hard enough for any student, but when you have to take extra care to listen to your body, or if your medication changes your sleep pattern, for example, it can be even more challenging to fit in work, extracurricular activities, exercise, and volunteering. These activities, or lack thereof, have an impact on other areas as well. Sarah explained that, as a result of barely managing all the responsibilities of school with my differently abledness, I'm not able to handle any type of employment or volunteer work. For grad or professional school, I'm worried about how the lack of career employment or volunteer experience on my resume will be interpreted by the admissions committee. If I tell them why I don't have it, they may look at me as incompetent, and if I don't tell them, they might still think that I am incompetent. In addition, the lifestyle that is required of students has important impact on the body. Jesse spoke to me about how the required immobility of sitting constantly for hours, listening to lectures, writing essays, reading textbooks, takes a physical toll. The pace of the work can be hard to juggle with mood and anxiety disorders too. It feels somewhat daunting. Ideally, if body was not a concern, I would go for my PhD. However, it's tricky when you know that you have no control over the future. We never have control, but when you have a disability, that becomes much more apparent. It's frustrating that there are so many restrictions around the process of getting an education. The amount of work in your master's or your doctorate. Ideally, I would like to be a teacher, but being tenured is such an intense experience. The amount that you have to do to get your tenure, and it is incredible, and it doesn't stop. It's not possible to keep that up. It's too bad, because I would love to do it, but it's not physically possible for me, says Jesse. Jesse is all too aware of the way that academia just isn't flexible enough for people with disabilities. The girls commented on the chronic barriers implicit within government disability assistance programs. In fact, people with disabilities on student loans are automatically disqualified from applying for BC Disability Income Assistance, as their loan is perceived as an asset and their ability to study a negation of their disability. It's ironic, but true. Only the most persistent and savvy can access the accessibility services. Both Anna and Jesse described applying for disability income assistance in British Columbia and disability status in Canada as stressful, not what someone with health issues needs. Anna does not receive it. She couldn't remember if it was denied or if she'd given up throughout the process. But Jesse did stick it out and says, "It took a long time. It took a lot of work. In a sense, I'm lucky that I have a bad enough disability. It's technically enough that I was able to qualify. There was a need to prove it, though. There was a lot of runaround." In a nation that likes to tell its youth that they can be anything and do anything, Jesse talked about wondering who exactly can do anything. In an ableist world, certain types of ability are rewarded, while others are made invisible. As differently abled women, they also encounter sexism, and there are intersections between the two identities for some of the women I spoke to. For Anna, her invisible disability combined with her gender has made her feel like the typical hysterical woman. This feeling would come up when she saw doctors about her chronic pain syndrome, especially before it was officially diagnosed. As a feminist, it has also been hard for her to accept being so dependent on her male partner. Part of Anna's chronic pain syndrome is tied to an eating disorder, and it is hard for her to emotionally separate the two issues. She connects her anorexia with the pressure she has faced as a woman, and so feels that her gender is bound up in my disability. It's a very complicated relationship, she says. Jesse, on the other hand, believes that being differently abled is easier as a woman because it's considered more expected or cute when a woman can't do things. Sarah identifies as a South Asian queer differently abled woman and said these various parts of myself intersect in various ways depending on the context. Usually I come to terms with one or more parts of myself identity when I encounter difference. It is clear that there are complex connections between ability, gender, and an entire range of identities, further complicating the experience of ability. This is just barely a peek into the experiences of these three women. Their disabilities remain invisible in the classroom and on the bus, but that doesn't make the problem more manageable. Immediately visible or not, their challenges are real. They require our advocacy, our social and institutional action to make their experience visible and to acknowledge their great value. Thank you for your interest in Antigone Magazine. Antigone Magazine is published by the Antigone Foundation, an organization dedicated to encouraging young women aged 10 to 35 to get involved in leadership, politics, activism, and feminism. We are working to make our organization and our magazine more accessible. If you are interested in helping us out, please email us at antigonefoundation@gmail.com. That's antigonefoundation@gmail.com.